Welcome to Skype for Business, Subject Matter Expert, or SME Roundtable. Hi, I'm Sherry Bettine, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. Today, I'm here with many of our IT experts that run the Skype for Business service here at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. We would like to learn a little bit about you before we begin. So we've posted a question in the live Q&A window. Where are you in your cloud deployment journey for Skype for Business? As you answer this question, your responses are on the monitor in front of us, and it can help shape how we answer your questions. Right now, I'd like to ask our SMEs to introduce themselves. We'll start with Casey.
Hi. My name is Casey Han, service engineer for Skype for Business, and I manage session border controllers and gateways, and which manages enterprise voice. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, my name is Dwight Jones, and I am a senior service manager for Skype for Business. I have supported the Get to Green service improvement in the past as service management lead, and I also support problem management today.
Good morning. My name is Jonathan Lewis. I'm a senior service manager for the collaboration technologies. My team owns Exchange in the cloud. We own SharePoint in the cloud, and actually right now I have a heavy focus on Skype for Business online in the cloud and also Microsoft Teams.
Hello, Donna Patterson. I'm the engineering program manager for Skype for Business client, which includes desktop, web, and the mobile clients. And most recently with our launch Microsoft Teams.
Very good. You can now start posing your questions through the live Q&A window. And also, if you have any feedback for our product teams, we have a direct line to them, and we would be happy to share your feedback back to the product team. So as you're thinking of your questions, if you also have feedback for the product teams, let us know that as well. We'll only be answering the questions here, but we will collect up that feedback and deliver it to the product teams. With that, we will make every effort in the next hour to answer all of your questions. However, if we don't, we'll stay behind in the studio and continue answering questions until we get through them all. And we'll post them as extended footage on this video on our Microsoft.com/IT Showcase site. So with that, let's take our first question. What are the key strategies for readiness when transitioning from Link 2010, Link 2013, and Skype for Business?
You want to do it from a desktop first? And
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the first critical strategy when you're transitioning is understanding what features you want to employ in that next version or that next release. So as you move forward, you want to identify what legacy items you want to keep, what items or features or experiences you want to roll forward, and then plan that out, formally, like Dwight said, end to end. So when you plan it out, you want to look at, hey, I want to launch my communication plan, I want to have a pilot plan, I want to identify a ramp plan, as well as my support model. And as you roll those out, whether it's 2010, 2013, or Skype for Business, you have that end-to-end plan and maybe incorporate it with a T-minus plan on where you want to launch. Include not only features, IT admin, whether you're going to pull in the strategy of a bring your own device, but you also want to couple it with a feedback communication loop or a channel to push and pull communication to and from the end user.
Yeah, I think Donna really did a good job of hitting most of the key ones. You know, for me, it's like she said, we kind of have an eight-step program as we move from different versions. And the support is absolutely key, getting ready for support. And actually, one of the things that she kind of mentioned, communication plan, but that includes training. So if you're going to have some differences in tech, you know, in the available functionality between different versions, then you're going to want to make sure that your users are aware of those differences and that you're training them to be able to take advantage of them.
Do you want me to kind of speak from a server or enterprise perspective?
Absolutely.
So, when you're looking to migrate from, you know, 2010 or 2013, It's very important that you follow the guidelines that are, you know, based on the server capacity need, based on the network capacity needs of your business, realizing that there are architectural differences with each platform, especially migrating from 2010 that has more of a distributed architecture to 2013 or to Skype for Business, which have are very similar from a server or architectural perspective. You want to make sure that you have the right amount of hardware to support the platform and to keep everything healthy, as well as the network capacity there. So.
Yeah, and I think I want to add on, Dwight, we actually we ran into a situation when we went from 2010 to 2013 where we actually, instead of building out new hardware, which we would have done in the past, and then migrating users to the new hardware, we actually decided to use the current hardware. And we just actually, we failed. We have the ability to run 100% on each of the different pools that we have in the regions. So we just failed everybody over to one, built out on the existing hardware, failed everybody back over, built out the other pool, and then did some load balancing between the two. But what happened was we found that the hardware that we kept actually wasn't powerful enough to handle some of the new features and functionality as we went to Skype for Business. So that is a really important piece that you want to make sure that you're looking at.
Great. Okay, thank you. Next question. Will Skype, Teams, Yammer, Office 365 groups be further integrated?
Currently, we actually just did that. With the launch of Microsoft Teams, we built Microsoft Teams, which is a chat-based O365 offering that's built on Groups, built on SharePoint, and built on the back end of Skype Consumer, which pulls in the persistent chat. You can partition your OneNote. You can pull in connectors, which are third-party applications like Yammer, Twitter. You can pull in your Bing searches and things like that. What it is a one-stop hub for the team of the future, and that's through our O365 licensing. More to come on that as well.
Yeah, and I do think you're going to see some convergence over time with some of those different technologies, in particular Microsoft Teams and Skype for Business. You're going to see there's some crossovers there, so you're going to see some convergence. And we're really looking to the product group to also give us some guidance around to hand off to users. When do I use Yammer versus when do I use Teams versus mm-hmm. Groups? So that's something we're working on currently. We know that that's an outstanding question. We have those questions internally as well,
yeah.
Even though we're Microsoft, but that's something you're going to be seeing as we head further down the path.
And as users of that service, we're testing out different concepts to figure out what works best in different situations.
Yeah, and I've actually been challenging different groups to come up with use cases for things like Microsoft Teams. You know, like our Tier 3 support team, I kind of challenged them, and they're actually really taking it to the highest level. So it's been really fun to see some of the different ways people are coming up with to work with Microsoft Teams and some of the other technologies as well.
Mm-hmm. Can you speak to the future of response groups or third-party contact center integration with Skype for Business Online? Who's a good person for that question?
I can
tee it off, right, in that. You know, with the Skype for Business Online, one of the challenges that we're having is ensuring that we have feature parity with what we have in our on-premise instance. And response group, we definitely have that on the high priority list with the product group roadmap on how we solve that particular challenge. So we do have that as a future product improvement. We don't have a release date on that yet to make sure that those response groups are available in the cloud just like on-prem.
Okay. So when we talk to our product group about this response group parity between on-prem versus cloud, mm-hmm. we mentioned how many instances that we are using in on-prem, and then I think we were able to convince them we gotta have a solution for the cloud, and they are trying to make that new feature for cloud right now.
So. Absolutely.
Okay, great. Next question, how do you install multiple SIP carriers in the same SBC.
Session Border Controllers, yeah. So when we started converting from our TDM network to SIP trunking, we had started with one carrier handling all America's telephone calls, and we start from that one first, and then we want to expand it more. We want to have like another countries, and especially we have a lot of phone numbers in Redmond main campus, and we had to add another SIP carriers, and we asked them, it's like, is it possible to have like second SIP trunking on a same session border controller rather than building another one? And they say, yes, we can do it, and we figured it out. And basically what we had to do was, since each carrier has a different IP address, we talked to network group, and network group told us, like, we can have like a physical carrier coming into same point, and then they can network group can separate the traffic by using what they call VLAN, and we can, depends on the carriers, they provide different IP addresses, and then we ask network group to like configure VLAN for that carriers, and virtually we could install multiple SIP carriers going to the same session border controllers, and we start from there, and then after that we migrate like all the main campus telephone numbers to that second carrier, and after that they want to expand. We want to expand like for Canada and LATAM, and we and for that side we have to choose another carrier. So this is third carrier that we have to provide our SIP chunking. And what we did was we did repeat the same thing again. We talked to the network group, and they create another VLAN for that third carrier, and we're able to have like one session border controller controlling all the main campus, other sites in the United States and Canada and LATAM using same hardware.
Very good. I would like to know how I can synchronize conversation between Skype on PC and then on an iPhone. Each conversation is currently recorded per device. Thanks.
I think that feature now is not available, and we're actually working on some native clients builds. So I think you can do handoff. Pick up, you know, start one conversation or a chat and pick up on advice. But what you're asking in particular for the recording, that's not available, and that's something I think we need to take back to the PG group.
Yeah, it's good feedback.
Add it to the list.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Are you running a contact center such as Clarity Connect internally? And do you face any issues with trusted application endpoints with maximum followers reached if many users add the contact to their own contact list?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in Microsoft, our group does not have a Clarity, but we do have a customer support who has their instance of a Clarity, and they use Clarity for external supporting Microsoft for external customers.
I think it's important to note that they're actually running their own instance of Link, I believe it is still.
Yeah.
For the contact center for our product support that Casey was just talking about. So they're actually kind of owning that all up. And Microsoft IT really hasn't had that much of a hand in managing that part of the business.
So we don't have a full answer on that?
Right. No. Okay. We can get some follow-up answers from John Hoyer, actually.
What is the best way to use Skype as a remote admin way to help users with their PC? Parentheses, you can not install anything since it does not support UAC. So best way to use Skype as a remote admin way to help a user with their PC. So if they're having problems.
Yeah, no, totally get it.
I think we can answer it in partial, right? The way that our global help desk, they use it today if there are tickets submitted to take control of our desktop to run certain procedures on your local PC with permission. They are also able to run certain localized bots for pulling or extracting content from that local PC, and they are troubleshooting. You know, that's the extent that, you know, we would probably be able to speak to that. And we, you know, there may be other tools that do that even more extensively. And but you know, that's the way that our local team, Global Help Desk, uses it today.
Yeah, and I think you know, and I did this just the other night, actually. I was troubleshooting an infrastructure issue, but basically what I did was I just shared out my desktop to product group engineer that I was working with.
And through Skype?
Through Skype, mm-hmm. Yep. I shared out my desktop. He could see everything I was doing. He could, basically what he was walking me through was to pull some Fiddler traces and some logs. And so he could see everything I was doing. He could, you know, he could basically say, now go over to the left and click here. And actually we pulled the logs because it was an interesting situation because they couldn't repro the issue that I was troubleshooting because they were on a whole different infrastructure than I am. So they really needed me to be able to pull my logs because they couldn't repro it to get an actual repro. So we do use it pretty extensively that way. The other thing I would say we do is we have the little smiley face. We used to call it the big red button. Doesn't really match the smiley face but there's some history there. But anyway, internally here, when we click on the smiley face, it not only allows us to give feedback on the issue we're facing, but it automatically pulls the logs from the user's machine and actually sends those off to the product group. So there's a couple of things we're doing there as well.
Okay, next question. What is the latest on Skype for Business on the Mac client?
I think the biggest thing with Skype for Business on the Mac client is trying to, you know, we launched, obviously you can do similar things, you can do Skype for Business. So your meetings, your recording, your desktop sharing. We're working, the new features is video-based screen sharing and pulling in the groups management. Those are the big two items that we're trying to get parity from Skype for Business on our Windows and what's coming out on our Mac. And we launched that October 27th, so that's out.
Yeah, that was the newest version.
That's the new version, Skype for Business for the Mac.
Yeah, the Mac client. Yeah, that was an important release for us. We actually internally get a lot of feedback from our users who mm-hmm. are, we have quite a few people using Macs mm-hmm. internally at Microsoft because we do develop applications for the Mac. So it's an important piece of work that the client team is really focused on. They want to have an experience where it's complete parity with using a Windows machine versus a Mac versus a mobile phone. So that's really what our aspirations are for the near future.
And launching Mac gave us Skype for Business being device agnostic. Mm-hmm. Now it's across Windows, Android, iOS obviously, and now the Mac. So that was a big deliverable.
Yes.
Great. How do you answer general question about how secure Link Skype is for confidential client use?
Well, we know that all of the communications are encrypted. We use MTLS, TLS, SSL. There's a whole rigor and there's a lot of information that speaks to the secure nature of Skype for Business. And that's what differentiates the enterprise scale of Skype for Business from say a millennial type application that is not going to be concerned about that. That is what Microsoft emphasis is, to make sure that you have a secure, scalable platform that the end users and corporations can trust.
I think another piece to dovetail on that is also mm-hmm. when you're looking at your BYOB, a lot of people want to use their own personal devices. So we also incorporate this multi-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. So when you're coming in and you want to hand off from your desktop to your iPhone or to your iPad or Windows or Android, you must do that multi-factor authentication to say, hey, this is me, I'm logging in, and that secure encryption is carried all the way through.
The multi-factor auth is important. The other thing is, we have encryption both across the wire as well as encryption at rest to make sure that the data is secure. Plus, we actually BitLocker our servers. So it's almost like double encryption in a lot of ways. So that's probably one of the key cornerstones of our security platform.
Sounds good. When a CU is released for Skype for Business server, I'm always missing the more detailed information. What is actually new with the CU? Do you get more details about what's covered in an update than a premier customer?
That's a good feedback that we should take to the product group to provide better release notes that come with the CU updates.
Do we struggle with that?
That's absolutely a growing area. And also, I think if you look at, which a lot of people don't, if you go to your mobile devices and when you have those in-app updates, most people don't go into the settings or go into the help, which will tell you what's sometimes the latest items, and they don't read it, but they sometimes have it at their, that's a part of that communication and that training that teach your end users where to find that information if you're not going to always push it to them. One piece of advice we have from our Microsoft Teams is when we heard that feedback, we built it all in. So if you go into the help, we have a T-bot, we have videos built into the app, as well as latest release. And if you hit that release tab, it tells you what's the latest and greatest right there in that paragraph.
So that's the Teams product.
That's the Microsoft Teams product.
Yeah. And so, sounds like good advice to roll out across
Yes.
I think the challenge and what you see is a byproduct of being extremely agile. In the past, Microsoft, we used to be on the 18-month release cycle and very slow to market. But with that, you knew exactly what was being released, what particular KBs came with different releases. But now, being agile, and we do a lot of tiny fixes very quickly in our environment, that it's sometimes it's difficult to categorize what has come in this bucket of fixes, and so we do need to do a better job of being able to articulate what is coming with those small fixes and then the big CU updates as well.
But yeah, but it's good feedback. I actually was talking to another customer last week and they had the exact same feedback. They're like, how can we stay out ahead because these changes are coming at us so fast that we're unable to really react. And we're doing a better job internally, but we need to do a better job externally as well. Although we've been caught, we've had things introduced in the environment. The knock knock is one prime example. Which actually caught us by surprise. Unfortunately, the product group had released something we weren't prepared for, and our users were taken by surprise, and that's not good for anybody. So
no.
It is something. It's a conversation we're going to be having with the product group that actually supports our external customers as well.
Okay. How long does it take your front end servers to rejoin the pool after security patches using Invoke CS Computer Failover?
I think that's a PG LSE's question.
Yeah,
that's
we don't perform that.
Yeah, the product group now handles that type of thing for us.
Because we're cloud-based.
Yeah, so we can maybe take that offline and get a more solid answer.
All right. Do you have smart card users at Microsoft, and how do you solve the issue for them to sign in from a mobile device?
We've moved away from using smart cards and we use different authentication methods, and I don't know if that's
globally.
We use virtual smart cards. Yeah, we're not really.
Where we download the search to the device. We also use two-factor phone authentication services as well. But we've moved away from the actual smart cards where we hold the certs on the actual card itself.
Yeah, it used to be a situation where the multi-factor auth with a physical smart card, and we all had readers, and a lot of the laptops now have readers. Mm-hmm. It used to be it was something you physically had in your hand and something you knew, which was your PIN. Mm-hmm. Now, with the TPM or Trusted Platform Module chipsets, we can actually do that virtually, and actually now the PC is the thing that you have in your possession, mm-hmm. and you still have the PIN that you know. So it's still multi-factor authentication, but we don't have to have all these smart card readers, and people would leave their smart cards in their laptops and they would melt, and I mean all kinds of crazy stuff. So we've gotten away from that, as Dwight said, and now we can actually use the PC as long as it supports TPM, which most PCs do today.
Yep.
Of course, mobile phones don't. So as you also mentioned, the phone factor authentication is actually really key for that.
And you have to trust the search on the mobile client,
yeah.
and that ends up in your settings in general.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Donna, I think this one's for you. Where can you get more information on Teams? And maybe you expand that to talk a little bit about Teams.
Yes, on Microsoft Teams, we do have a customer-facing SharePoint or site that will give you access to the link after this. And pretty much, it's a hub collab for a team. If you think of in the past, the old, we say, 2015 way of managing teams, you had a team meeting, whether it was on Skype for Business, you had a virtual V team, and half the team couldn't attend because it was daylight, nighttime. But now you can have meetings in Microsoft Teams. You can have a meet now. Everyone in on the team and within the channels can meet it. You archive your files, which is a OneDrive. You can archive your OneNote, so you can take meetings right there in the application. You can upload PowerPoint, Excel, Power BI, pull in some of the more rich collab tools. But also, if you record your meeting or your meet now, everyone in that channel can join. And then all your records are maintained there. So if a person misses the meeting, they can just go back into Microsoft Teams, look at that respective channel, and then follow. A good way that we've employed Microsoft Teams is, as we launched it out, we had our go-to-market strategy. And we have a team. It has multidisciplined people. We have about 30 different channels. So when it was user experience, all the files were there. When it was the trainer, and I had to partner with, I didn't have to send out a bunch of emails. I uploaded the file, mentioned the team, and the folks went in there and did co-authoring right there in the tool. One-stop shop for everything.
So you were using Teams as you were planning out your rollout?
Yes, we used it to actually roll it out internally. It's so nice to be able to actually talk about Microsoft Teams now, because in the past, Donna and I were actually working on this for the last 6 or 7 months, but it was highly confidential. So in these settings, we couldn't really talk about it. But it's exciting. We had to kind of keep it under wraps until the 2nd of November when we actually launched it. But now there's going to be a ton of information out there. You should be able to go out on TechNet and places like that and search for Microsoft Teams. And we were able to actually get a whole bunch of stuff created before we actually made the official announcement. So if you go out and search in TechNet or other technical forums, you're going to find a lot of information now. Now we can actually talk about it.
Yeah, I think it's super exciting, the work that you all have done to bring that to market. But, you know, I think it will answer a lot of the questions. And John, you know, we've gone out and done a listening and education tour. So we've heard from Microsoftees as well as external companies that were asking us, okay, how are we going to be able to have our history teams take care of that? Just a lot of the middleware. How are we going to compete with the Slacks out there and this any other? You know, what I've seen from Teams is that it does that and so much more as it wraps the O365 platforms and just the potential. And you know, pulling in Skype is just tremendous. And I think it answers a lot of those questions that we've gotten from end users of how we're going to bring it together, how we're going to have conversation history, et cetera, et cetera. And it makes it happen. So I'm excited to see y'all work.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
A question, is the product group the developers? And I'll go ahead and take that one. Yes, the product team is the group of developers and PMs and testers that are delivering the software that we all use.
Yep, they write the code.
Yeah, and if you think about it, and to expand on it, Microsoft, we're always first and best in terms of testing our products internally with our users before we launch it as a external product. And the product group is that team that's working on the futures and working on driving those improvements. And we provide them with the feedback, which, you know, coming from users like you, so please engage with any feedback that you may have, plus our Microsoft internal users. So we take that and provide them the feedback that becomes the next evolution of our products and services. Mm-hmm.
Is there any video as a tutorial to let global admin to configure RTC conference call on Skype Enterprise?
Would it be Channel 9 or something like that?
Could be.
Channel 9. Yeah. It's Microsoft.
So we have a lot of...
You have on our channel.
And you might also find something on TechNet.
TechNet or Lynda. Yeah.
TechNet tends to be more of the technical admin type audience.
Yes. And I know that the Skype for Business has also a YouTube channel.
Yep.
There are several options.
And there's also YouTube user groups in your local areas that cover those types of topics as well.
Mm-hmm. You'll be amazed. You can just search YouTube, like you said, and see a lot of the topics out there. Yep. Sean Wilson works with that.
That's right.
All right. Very good. Will notification options be expanded in future updates for Teams? My group stopped using Teams and then went back to Skype persistent chat because they didn't like the notification option.
I think I know what you're talking about. The notifications are, you can do in Banner or you can do an email, but then also currently now we're getting a double toast. And the Double Toast comes in Skype for Business and actually in Microsoft Teams. And that was one that I alluded to earlier, is make things configurable at the end user level, because the feedback that we got was, hey, what if I'm not in Teams and I want to still get that notification? It will come in an email in Skype for Business and vice versa. Well, that was our initial feedback we heard, but actually once we went live, people were saying, you know, that's a little disruptive. So we're working to configure that in an upcoming bill to where you can turn it off at the end user level and not at the IT admin. We hear you loud and clear.
Mm-hmm. And I think as you see the convergence between Microsoft Teams and Skype for Business, some of that kind of funky experience will go away.
Okay. How do you keep the service up during the upgrade of the firmware for SBCs and Skype for Business servers?
I can answer that. So actually, we are currently upgrading our session border controller for Microsoft main campus. And actually, we are doing one tonight. And one of the main thing about like upgrading session border controllers, we want to keep the calls up. Even though we are upgrading firmwares, we don't want to have like, even though we are doing it in the middle of the night, we want to have, if the call is already there, it could be just one call, could be really critical. So we want to keep the call up. And what we are doing is we, for like session border controller, for each side, we do have two boxes.
Yeah, fault tolerance.
Fault tolerance is basically is high availability, and one is active all the time, and the other one is standby. So when we do the upgrade, we do upgrade standby first, upgrade firmware. The call stays on active SBCs. And then after we are done with the upgrade on the second box, we reboot the active ones, and then all calls will automatically available to the second box without dropping any calls.
Excellent.
And we'll do the upgrade on the second box and we do the repeat.
And you got all the SIPs going to both boxes,
yes,
right? The
yes,
carriers.
Yeah.
Right?
And we also have geo diversity because we have session border controllers here in Redmond where our headquarters are, but also in Charlotte, North Carolina,
right,
in case we need to fail over for geo diversity purposes, like
right,
disaster recovery.
Excellent.
Okay. What are some of the challenges faced with supporting the server environment?
Some of the biggest or the key learnings that we took from a large service improvement that we ran here, Get to Green, is the ability to keep our environment from end to end healthy, as well as the impact from change. If you can imagine a Microsoft environment, I talked about how we were supporting the 2010, Link 2010 environment, 2013, as well as Skype for Business on-prem and in the cloud, so multiple enterprises of that. But if you can think about the complexity that the broader Microsoft adds in terms of, you know, new Windows deployments, new Surface devices, things of that nature, the change dynamic can be daunting. And so the way that we manage change and are able to ensure that our environment is healthy end to end is where we drive the most improvement. So as we deprecated 2010 and 2013, and now we can just focus on Skype for Business and now getting everyone to the cloud, it really simplifies our environment. And then we're able to as we go to the cloud, we're able to transfer some of the risk of change of being in a shared IT environment as we are in a dedicated and multi-tenant environment in the cloud. So being able to simplify your environment to minimize some of those risks is a key journey that we're on. But, you know, the impact from change and health of your environment are your biggest challenges.
Well, and I think, yeah, and I think that's great. You know, and to add on to that, Skype for Business is real-time technology. So that has its own inherent challenges because data can recover from things like drop packets and latency pretty elegantly. But when you're talking real-time communication, you're talking voice, any little blip, you know, in the infrastructure can cause, you know, voice quality issues. So that's one of the big challenges from my perspective, is how do we make sure that all these other little things, I always call Skype, we're kind of the canary in the coal mine. If we have a DNS issue, it's going to get reported as a Skype issue, you know, even though it's not a Skype issue, it's really a DNS issue. So and that's one small example. So we are quite often we will catch things in our network. I always kind of jokingly say Skype is one of the best tools ever invented to find problems on your network, which is not what it's designed to do, but it does actually result in that quite often. So it is a huge challenge when you talk real-time communication versus data, and I think that's one of our big challenges.
Yeah. The only other thing I would add to that is that you don't want to stop at what your IT managed scenario. You have what's going on in the buildings and then at the end user level. Mm-hmm. So it all has to become that end-to-end package, and there's some user education that needs to take place to
device
understand. There's things that you have to do at the access layer, even from your home routing scenario or the buildings to make sure that the buildings are healthy. So all three legs of that stool all have to be in place for the service to be healthy.
Exactly.
End-to-end.
Devices, laptops, working from home, all those things can actually come into play when you talk about voice quality. So you're exactly right.
Yeah. I was going to ask, we asked our customers where they are on the cloud journey for Skype for Business. Where are we in our cloud journey for Skype for Business?
Okay, well, we started our journey in 2005 where we migrated our first, 2015 where we migrated our first 30,000 users in North America to Skype for Business in the cloud. And the way that we did it, it was more of a hybrid implementation where, we have our Microsoft users that are in the on-prem, so running Skype for Business server. Out of our 2008 users today, I think we have about 170,000 that remains in the on-prem. Now we have about 70,000 that are in that hybrid scenario, but we've also have the full E5 or the business voice the cloud voice as well as cloud conferencing. And we have about 13,000 users that are in that full environment. And we're continuing to scale very aggressively in the North America, but we've just passed a milestone that's called multinational corporation, where large corporations like Microsoft, others, IBM, et cetera, they're gonna have users all over the world. So we are now scaling our multinational cloud. We've stood up our Europe cloud environment, and now we've onboarded our first full office, Cambridge, in the UK, and so we have the multinational cloud offering that is it now up and running. We are solving challenges with porting with carriers and some of the feature parity scenarios, but that's where we are in our migration. We're continuing to scale North America. Now we're bringing on EMEA and APAC will follow.
Building out APJ. We're building out APJ as we speak.
Dwight, you have already UK number right now to test it, right?
So even though I work from Redmond, I'm one of the first that went to the EMEA cloud, and my Skype for Business experience, all of my presence, my number, everything is hosted out of the Europe cloud. So my calls have to go to Europe and then back to the United States for all my conferencing and everything. And the service has been spot on. I'm able to do my work daily. I'm providing feedback for those small feature gaps and things of that nature. But I'm not, I'm working very well in that environment. So thumbs up for the multinational cloud.
Very cool. How do you run a quality assurance environment, which is a mirror from the production environment? Or how do you test updates and new functionality?
Oh, what we normally do is we have a test team out of Singapore that does a lot of our testing, and what it does is 2 weeks before we get our bill, we call it the escrow bill, that we test not only Skype for Business across 1,000+ scenarios, but we test interoperability. So we tested with the Windows, we tested with the Office, we tested now with Microsoft Teams, we tested with conferencing technologies. So we have created end user or scenarios that we test the build, the functionalities, and the capabilities across those different tenants or environment to understand what those end user experiences are. And if we identify any issues or any bugs, we push those back to the respective group, PG or whichever, and we work through getting that up. So we try to continually be in a testing mode to better understand the environment and how the features are going to land and how the interoperability with those. Because when we first launched our Windows 10, we did find out that some of the features were a little different and some of the settings seemed to change without our knowledge. And we were able to go back in, give that feedback to PG saying, hey, when you do this and this, here's the experience the end user is going to see, and we wanted to optimize or maximize that experience.
And I think that's a great explanation from the client side. From the server side, and Dwight, you can back me up on this. What we've done is we've actually built out a ringed environment. So we have three rings. Ring zero, think of it in terms, I wish I had a whiteboard, so I can, I'm handicapped here without my whiteboard. But if you think of the middle zero, ring zero, that's where all the developers are. That's like build of the day, complete chaos by design. And once they come up with a build that they feel is very, very strong, then we have a second ring. And that's about probably 8,000 people, mostly people from our team, Microsoft IT, early adopters, elite. And what we do in that ring is we test this new build at scale. So we can at least scale it to about 8,000 people. But and we used to have just those two rings, but there was still what we call dogfooding or early builds. There's still high rate of change in that ring. So we decided to build out a third ring, which is ring two, just to be confusing. But the third ring is where we put like our executives, our field sellers, people who need really a very, very solid and
consistent experience.
Yeah, consistent experience who are selling, you know, they're out, you know, presenting to customers. It's really a lot more like a typical customer environment. So that's how we kind of go through the testing and the validation ring and then the final ring.
Where most and of all that's are. Before we launch a product?
And then that, once that all happens, then it goes to
So customer. We are actually, for our own organization, doing our QC or QA in these rings before we launch
we
it fully to all
group.
Employees.
Absolutely. And then,
and to
ultimately
customers.
To the customers.
And I want to add to that, you know, expound on it and then add on it to it just a little bit from a quality control perspective. Those rings of validation, you know, in the way that an external customer may think about that from a release management, you know, you'll think about your sandbox environment or your pre-production environment then to production. And so we're following, you know, that typical model. But, you know, another thing that we've learned in that's launched with Skype for Billing Business service was the call quality tool set, right? And sometimes even with all the rings of validation, when you deploy in a global environment, there may be nuances in buildings and things of that nature. So, you know, John and I, we've actually just finished a global tour where we've trained our local or regional IT managers with the call quality dashboard, which launched with Skype for Business. And that tool allows you to look at a building. The way we use it, it has dimensions for internal, external, wired, wireless, all your streams that happen through Skype for Business, and it measures poor call rate. But what it allows our IT managers to do in a very succinct fashion is look at a dashboard and see how healthy their buildings or the users they're managed are. And that helps us to ensure that anything that is deployed from an IT or product group perspective, that we are maintaining quality at that user level and they're able to see the health of those end users immediately and mitigate issues and make sure drivers are up to date, et cetera, et cetera. So that call quality dashboard is how we take from the piece that we're doing with the server and the client, but also bring the user experience because we're able to measure user sentiment as well to make sure that we're having the quality effect on our end users.
You must have looked ahead at my next question, which says, what tools do you use to monitor voice quality? So call quality dashboard might be one of them. Are there others?
You know, we use some third-party tools to make sure, well, for, For voice quality, the call quality dashboard is our primary tool.
Correct.
But what we do use to make sure that the service is healthy and that calls are able to happen, there's a tool that's called PowerMun. Mm-hmm. It's a third-party tool, and I forget the name of the company.
Unified Square provides
that tool set for us. But what it does, it actually, we're able to have these probes that are outside of our data center, and it does not synthetic transactions. It actually does the call setups. It establishes conferences and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. And that way, it's another tool to ensure that you're going to have healthy experiences from a geo-diverse perspective and that our service is running healthy.
Yeah, it's not just server up, server down, as Dwight was explaining. You have to hear sound at the other end. It has to act like an actual call. And so it's a really strong monitoring tool. And obviously, we also use SCOM to monitor the health of our servers. So that's another piece to our arsenal.
Okay, the next one, are there any plans to change the name of the product in the future? Having the same name for the consumer version and the business product is confusing. I'm going to take that as feedback to the product team because I don't think we're the right one.
Yeah.
But it's feedback. Dwight, remember, we got feedback similar to that when we were out in the field meeting with users. There is confusion. When do I use Skype for consumer versus Skype for business? So it's really good feedback. I don't know of any plans right now, but we'll take that back with the product.
It's good feedback. What is your own top request for new features? So what do we want as new features?
For me, I'll answer it first. In Skype for Business, I actually enjoy the capability of being able to hand off and pick it up for devices. But I like to have, I'm pushing the capability to record from my mobile device. So for Skype for Business, I want to have that.
So you can request record.
Record. If I'm on a call and I'm taking it from there, I want to be able to record there if I'm mobile, hands-free though. Mm-hmm. And then in Microsoft Teams, really looking for the ability to allow permissions at different levels and teams within the team or with security along the channels. And that's what I'm looking for.
How about you, Dwight?
I can take it from two perspectives, right? I can take it from a service management perspective and what I would like to see in the product, but then personally what I would like for my own usage, right? So as I continue this cloud migration, and to me, the key to making things better for us and to get the most out of the product is to get most of our users to the cloud. So seeing that feature parity from the cloud and on-prem instances of Skype for Business are keenly important to me. So there are some things we talked about, our RGS and some more of those features. So that's from a service management perspective. From a personal perspective, I would love to see kind of an offline mode with the client where, I've had a user in the UK reach out to me and say, hey, when we're in the tubes or the trains there, I would love to continue my IM conversation. And then when I get internet connectivity, it just picks up. So some type of caching or offline mode, I think, would be what I would like personally.
Yeah, and for me, my biggest ask of the product group is pretty, it's what I would like to see better telemetry delivered to the users. While you're in a call, I would like to see rather than just five bars that turn red, yellow, and white, and don't always mean anything, to be honest. I'd like to see better telemetry delivered to users. You're speaking on a unsupported device. You're in a very challenging networking conditions, and actually provide them with information. Because if you're in a conference call, all it takes is one person to trash a call.
Yep.
And if that person, even if they're just driving down the street with their window open, and they're on the call and they're not muted, that kind of thing. So I'd love to see better telemetry that means something delivered to our users, so the users can help themselves. That to me would be huge.
Yeah, for me, I've been asking protocol for a long time. It's blocking calls. If they know numbers, not spam calls. I want the client to block that phone numbers. And for now, we have to do it like our session border controller, the blocking numbers. But I want to have like client to decide which number to block. I mean, your cell phone can do it right now. You can block the spam callers. And I'm hoping that Skype for Business client can do the same thing. black and gold.
Would you we'll take that calls? Forward.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's a real world scenario. We get hit with those all the time from our executives. Yeah. So.
I have a follow-up question to an answer that you guys gave a little bit earlier. What was the name of the monitoring tool you mentioned, company name, third party?
It's Unified Square is the company, and they have what they call their power suite of applications. We use only the PowerMon portion of that that application.
But there are other pieces to it. Yeah. And they're pretty much all ex-Microsoft product group people who actually worked on OCS and the Link in the past, so they're extremely knowledgeable on the product itself. And so, yeah, so it's a pretty interesting suite of tools.
So we'll take one final question for Donna. How does Microsoft handle end-user education? Do you still have internal users that don't know how to use basic features of Skype?
Yes, we do. We handle it in a multi-faceted approach. We enabled a Skype at Microsoft Yammer site, which we push data out and we actually get pulled from end users where people can randomly say, hey, I'm experiencing this, has anyone seen this? And someone can answer, and we have some admins as well as people who are going to manage that and get a pulse and a sentiment of what's going on. So we have a Yammer site, Skype at Microsoft. We have the field sellers and walking around with IT managers, enabling that for training. We have all Microsoft productivity, but we also push information out there. We call it top of mind articles, that when you go out to our Skype at Microsoft or you go out to our Yammer or whatever, SharePoint sites or web ID webs, you will see that we have best tips and tricks and practices. We have end user productivity guides, and we still have continually training on Skype for Business, even though we launched it back in April of 2015.
And it's a great question, because the training piece, and Donna does a lot of this work for us, and things like we have what we call Work Smart guides that actually we have customer ready versions of those because it is important. I mean, it's still shocking to me when I was out in the field and Dwight and I to see people shouting into their laptop when we know that using the laptop mic and speakers is not the best experience. So to answer the other question is, the one question that was part of that is, yes, we do still have struggles internally to get our users to follow best practices, because we definitely recommend having a device, a headset, a little hockey puck, as we call them, the hands-free devices, versus talking on your onboard mic and speakers. It's just not the best experience. And I still walk around and see people yelling into their laptops. And it's like, here's a headset. You're going to have a better experience.
And I'll add that the productivity devices or the Work Smart guides that both Jonathan and Donna mentioned are on our website, microsoft.com/IT Showcase. We provide those to you guys so you can benefit from the tools we actually develop for our internal employees. And it is now time for us to start wrapping up. And I do want to ask our SMEs one final question. What is the one tip you would like to leave our customers with today? And we'll start with you, Donna.
I think I brought it out in the IT admin, having things configurable at the end user, but I'll expand on that. If you're launching a BYOD device program and you're allowing your employees to bring their devices, at the IT tenant admin, you want to identify what you're going to control and what the end user will control, whether you're going to apply multi-factor authentication and what they will and will not have access to. And that is a continual process. It's not an upfront process that you say, hey, here's our bandwidth, here's what we're going to do, here's our roadmap. That is a continued two-way communication of education, communication, and seeing just what works, because you want to maximize that end user's experience and allow them to be the most productive. And sometimes that says changing your original strategy and plan.
Yeah, my biggest tip is even as you move to the cloud, whether you're going to remain on-prem or in the cloud, as you deploy Skype for Business and move to the cloud, you need to make sure that your brothers in the networking and infrastructure side of the house are in lockstep with you, because we've had this bite us. The very first mailboxes we moved to the cloud years ago, we didn't really talk to the infrastructure and networking guys, and so it turned out we had some older firewall hardware. And as we moved the first couple thousand mailboxes, when you come in on Monday morning, they moved them on Friday. You download your entire mailbox, and so that was hitting all of our firewalls, and we actually tipped over our entire infrastructure as far as the firewalls go. So we had to actually, we actually had a project on the books to upgrade that hardware. We had to fast forward that a little bit. So bottom line is, you know, make sure you're preparing yourself and your network and your infrastructure, not just the Skype platform, for, you know, for deployment and moving to the cloud. And we actually have a great white paper, and I'll get a link to it, that is all about how did we prepare as Microsoft, you know, our internet egress, everything. How did we prepare to move to the cloud? Make sure that you are including your networking people and your infrastructure people in those conversations.
Yeah, that the journey is, you know, and it's pairing a lot on for what Jonathan is saying, but the thinking about the journey as an end-to-end journey, and the way that you know, I kind of consume it is, you have to be able to manage the health of your environment and keep your environment healthy and stable. And so working with your stakeholders, your partners, the futures, how are you working with driving the futures? We talked about release management, but then you also have to think about the user experience in that journey. And so things about ensuring the quality of the home experience, the external experience, your building experience, the you know, we just talked about how we keep our end users trained and understanding best practices. You gotta think about all three in terms of, you know, for the end-to-end solution to be one that is effective at scale.
Mm-hmm. My tip is like, if you're migrating from on-prem to hybrid, make sure how the dial plan and voice policy works. We missed it actually when we migrated from on-prem to hybrid. We forgot actually the for hybrid users, it's using what they call voice routing policies rather than voice policies. And when we migrate, all the calls were not working. So just pay attention to how the routing works in a hybrid situation.
Okay, very good. We would love your feedback on this session. So please take a moment to answer the poll question on what you thought of the session. I want to thank our SMEs for taking time away from your day jobs to come here and talk to our customers today. Mm-hmm. It truly is very important that we do this. And I want to thank our customers. We truly enjoy the questions and the dialogue and the opportunity to come talk to you. You will find this video and all the content that everyone mentioned. We write white papers, technical case studies, productivity guides. You can find all of that information on our Microsoft.com/IT Showcase site. We're here, we're all about helping you be successful with Absolutely. Microsoft's technology. I also want to say we have live shows like this weekly, and so please join us again and bring your colleagues. Thank you and have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
We are back with the extended footage portion of our program. We really only have one final question to ask our SMEs. We were talking about the monitoring tool that we use, the third-party tool, and the follow-up question was, and they are live monitoring of ongoing calls? Question mark.
So you know, I'll pick that up. We do not use PowerMon to do our live monitoring for quality. Built into the Skype for Business product and launched with Skype for Business was the call quality dashboard. That measures every call stream. And when you think of a stream, there's a stream in both directions for your caller, but we measure each one of those for quality and health based on certain key measurements. And we look at those throughout our ecosystem, whether they're internal to Microsoft, external, you know, from your home or et cetera, et cetera. And we are making improvements where we are now measuring from our buildings. We talked about how we've been on this listening and education tour where we've been training our IT managers, and now they can measure their users to make sure that the calls in each of their Microsoft buildings are healthy. And we use the poor call rating, which is our key performance indicator, to make sure that calls are healthy. We also measure user sentiment in those through the same call quality dashboard. So a percentage of users will get a pop-up to rate the call. We call it Rate My Call, and all that telemetry shows up in the call quality dashboard. So we are measuring each stream as well as user sentiment in the call quality dashboard. That's a part of the product.
Yeah, and on either one of those streams, inbound or outbound, if any of the measurements that we key in on, things like drop packets or round trip delay or jitter, if any of those are outside of the parameters that we have set for good call quality, then that call will be marked as poor. Yeah. So we kind of err on the side of being a little bit, you know, more cautious there. Now, I want to be really clear on the third-party tool. We do not monitor live calls. We actually monitor test calls, but they are real calls. I mean, as far as it's not just a synthetic transaction. It's not just, is the server up? It actually has to call in, and it has to hear noise on the other side. So it isn't a live user call, but they are real calls in that sense. So I just want to make sure we were clear on that.
Yeah. For the CQW to work, actually, the call has to be ended. But if you want to monitor in the middle of calls, we do use third-party solution called WinIQ, made by Touchstone. That one can actually monitor in the middle of the calls, and then you can see whether they have bad voice quality or whether the call is failing.
Yeah.
And remember, we actually also did a homegrown product that we built, My Setup, which allows the end user to go in and look and see for, it has a 24-hour delay, but you can go in and see on the past call what was the quality of it, red, yellow, and green, and who on that call was using what type of device and who may have been adversely impacting the call.
All right, very well. So that sounds like a complete suite of products that we use.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.